Hello, and you're very welcome to Your Politics, the RTE Politics podcast from our Leinster House team. I'm Áine Lawler. With me, my colleagues, Paul Cunningham and Juliette Gash. And Paul, how many podcasts have we started with housing? Once again, it's the same theme. We had the Economic and Social Research Institute today, the ESRI, coming out with another forecast, revising downwards their prediction for the number of houses to be delivered this year, circa 33,000. This follows the central bank last week. We had the story from our colleague David Murphy about the quarries and the looming shortage of concrete and sand and cement. We had really sad testimony from the Children's Ombudsman at the committee here in Leinster House about the impact on the 4,775 children who are homeless, on the impact that that is having on their childhoods today, and that there is nothing that can make up for it. So once again, the story is housing, housing, housing. Where are we at?
I think where we're at is a crucial time, because the data is going wrong. So you just quoted there from the latest stats from the ESRI. So they were talking about, they had predicted 34,000 homes for 2025. Now it's down to 33,000. One has to remember that the government's target was 41,000. So we're now 8,000 off. Last year, they meant delivered 30,300. And some are beginning to believe that it could be around that figure again. And then what you do is you juxtapose that, the, you know, shrinking targets, with what's actually increasing. And what's increasing is the number of homeless people. And that is 15,580 in May. The figures are due to be released tomorrow. We're recording this on a Thursday. Friday, the homelessness figures come out. And guess what? Everyone says they're going to go up. So this puts the government in an absolute bind. The number of houses we're going to build is going to go down. The number of homeless people is going to go up. And it's going to be put back to them by the opposition party saying, your plans are not working. Two things to watch out for, though. Next month, we'll get two big sort of statements from the government. One is the revised Housing for All plan. Now, the government is keen to say this isn't sort of like a big bang. They're going to have lots of little announcements, the little bangs, as we were talking about in the podcast. And the other is the updating of the National Development Plan. So once again, that's where things, strategic importance, will be put on things like water, energy, which hopefully, if they can overcome those problems, will increase the numbers. But where we're at right now is absolutely dire for the government, because no matter what they're saying, the stats are saying something different.
So there's a lot riding on Jack Chambers in terms of those big plans that have to come on infrastructure and the National Development Plan, because he's got his infrastructure task force working away as well. And what they decide is going to be key to what can be delivered on housing. Now, the government, it's not meeting its targets this year, didn't meet them last year. That was all the 40K and the election campaign, and that's all in the past now. The question now, that 300,000 that they said would be delivered over the lifetime of this government, the Taoiseach to Simon Harris saying yesterday on Wednesday that that was still the North Star. The question is, whether we've any chance of getting that.
I don't believe that there is any chance that we're going to hit that figure. I just don't believe it. And I'll tell you something else, talking to backbench government TDs, they don't think it either. What they're saying to me is that they're hoping is that by the time of the next general election, they'll be able to say, we've turned the oil tanker, we haven't got our targets right, but you can see we're on the way to getting there. And all of those issues we've just talked about, energy, you know, cement, number of workers, all that stuff will have been resolved. That's the best hope. But this has proven to be an intractable problem. So, you know, maybe it'll be worse than that again.
Yeah, and that point about turning the corner, because it is a phrase, I think I've heard it several times before, haven't I, that we've turned the corner on housing. But I think, is there a sense now, do you think, maybe of a dawning realism that, you know, there are so many levers here, and it's not like just coming up with, you know, one scheme that'll help people buy homes, or one scheme that'll help people find rented accommodation. It's actually about tackling several things all at once, from planning to infrastructure,
systemic change,
serviced land, all of that. So is there at least that realisation?
I think so, that there's no, again, to use another bit of a cliche, is there's no silver bullet. There's no one thing that's going to really, really solve a chunk of this. You know, Conor Sheehan was bringing up in Leader's Questions today, he's the Labour housing spokesperson, just how that figure, the 4775 you both brought up of homeless children, has gone up 60% in the past 5 years. I mean, that's huge. And when we are hearing the impact of homelessness on children and their futures, that's really a terrible indictment. Now, the Taoiseach, you know, he accepted that and he kept on saying it is a priority. But as you say, this dawning realisation of, well, no one's got a quick fix or a one single measure, that it will have to be the infrastructure, which is very difficult to to tackle, but that there will have to be on all fronts huge boosts and pushes and energy going on these.
I mean, I think there's no doubting that the Housing Minister, James Brown, has got stuck in. You can see that he's in a much better position now than he was before. You can hear us talking of collective action from other ministers saying they know that they have to do it. James Brown can't do it. So, as you mentioned, someone like Jack Chambers, they have to chip in and get things sorted. Backbenchers say they believe that, you know, some of their ideas are now being able or being taken on board. But as we mentioned in the podcast last week, there is still a sense that more needs to be done by Micheál Martin and by Simon Harris in articulating that vision, that it isn't just saying it's emergency, that you're saying it and people are seeing you do something about that. And that's a slight disconnect, which I still think has to be resolved.
So a lot's going to become clearer, I think, over the next month, the summer months, whatever. The other thing that's been pressing on people's minds, certainly starting to be raised much more by politicians again, and this is the issue of the cost of living, Juliet, and Sinn Féin leader Mary Lou MacDonald asking Micheál Martin whether he does the weekly shop. She certainly had her prices.
She certainly had her prices. She was talking about the massive increases in basics that everyone, nearly every household buys, you know, your butter going up, milk going up. And she was really pressing this to Micheál Martin. Now, hat tip to Miriam Lord for her brilliant column on it. She was saying that he would be desperate if he was in charge of the household shop, because you wouldn't get any cheese, you wouldn't get any biscuits, you wouldn't get any treats. He's a well-known health nut. No crisps, lots of green tea and maybe some fibre-rich foods. But no, it's obviously a very serious issue, and it was brought up again in Leaders' Questions today, and just the notion that families are really, really, really struggling. Now, Sinn Féin put out a survey among, obviously, its members and fans and supporters, asking if they had, you know, their feedback on the cost of living. Obviously, people who are feeling the pinch are going to answer that, rather than people who maybe don't know the end of the cost of their weekly shop. But I think 91% of them said that they were having severe trouble making ends meet. And he cited a family of with two professionals, two lecturers at the head of the family, one of whom was not working to enable, you know, raising their four children.
Because said, childcare was so high.
Exactly. And then they were saying that they didn't know how on earth they were going to afford college next year for their teenagers. So people are still really struggling. But the difficulty is we know that the government is not going to continue those cost of living measures because they're too expensive and they're not targeted enough, as they would say.
Yeah, I mean, just Simon Harris did intervene and he listed off 10 different measures that the government was taking and saying, we may not do something in the budget, but what we are doing is doing something every single day. So he's talking about, say, like fuel allowance that was going to be expanded, the number of people, carers allowance that was going to increase. And he listed off a whole range of things. So there is going to be that political tension. Clearly for Sinn Féin, I think, and others, they're saying you do have to have in a special budgetary package. And that would possibly include, although Piers Doherty didn't mention it, something like an energy credit. And the government saying, no, that was a temporary measure. We have to move away from that and factor it into things. I suppose one of the arguments is it all going to be universal payments or what qualifications are going to apply.
And you have to look at other countries too, where they really do step in and are more involved in not setting prices, but demanding lower prices on certain things. In France, you have to be able to go to your local bakery and buy a loaf of bread, a baguette, for a euro. Every bakery has to offer a cheap bread. And in the UK, they've also taken measures to make sure that energy costs aren't spiralling as they are here. So there's a lot to be said for other countries' approaches too.
But it's interesting because, in fact, what's going to happen to our energy prices, they're going up by, on average, I think, 10%. There's various changes and charges coming there. They're already amongst the highest energy prices in Europe. Cost of living, when a chicken goes from a fiver to 11 euro in the space of 3 years, people notice that. And the dilemma for the government, I mean, obviously it would be, you know, maybe if we were facing an election as we were last year, cost of living supports would be continued in the budget. They're certainly politically popular. On the other hand, they've got everyone from the Fiscal Advisory Council to the ESRI banging on about how you can't be using, blowing our windfall corporation taxes on day-to-day, subsidising day-to-day expenses. And the government has got to do more to live within its means. And we've had Jack Chambers, haven't we, warning other ministers about that as well. It's going to make the run-up to this year's budget really interesting.
Yeah, I mean, he was writing to all the ministers telling them to get their house in order. Now, that would be fairly common. What he wasn't doing was giving us any hints as to whether he was writing two letters to Minister Cunningham, but only one letter to Minister Gash. In other words, was he pointing the finger at someone? We haven't really seen that. I think if you look at, say, something like energy, it is a real problem. And part of that comes from our supply. 80% we import. You know, in the UK, they got nuclear power. They had the North Sea. They had loads of things. But and we still haven't been able to get that offshore wind, which if I think back 20 years ago to when I was an environment correspondent, I would have expected that we would have had stuff off the West Coast, and we simply don't. So when it comes to the budget, things are going to get tight. And then we haven't mentioned it, but everything could be upended if Donald Trump decides to impose his 10% tariff, 15% tariff, 20% tariff. And nothing goes faster than redundancy money. Once, you know, the economic ship turns, you know, everything is going to come under scrutiny. And we, it isn't too long ago when we remember those dark budgets of the crash where just cut.
Interestingly, Jennifer Carroll McNeill brought up the Department of Public Expenditure and Reform today when she was talking about the ending of this long COVID scheme. She said they very clearly last year said the final extension of the long COVID scheme for healthcare workers would be last June. So it's ending at the end of this month, at the end of June. And there are 160 odd workers who have contracted long COVID through work will be cut off from that scheme on Monday.
Yeah, so the government is trying to wean people off the cost of living supports that, you know, we got used to through the COVID years and the inflationary spike. Obviously, that's not going to be politically popular. On the other hand, Seamus Coffey from the Fiscal Advisory Council, at the moment we've got a 28 to 30 billion corporation tax base. So he says within 5 years, that could be plus or minus 15 billion. That's how much it could change. Now, given the amount of money we know we're going to have to spend on infrastructure, on housing, the fact that we've got a growing population, we can't keep up with demand anywhere we turn. I don't know how you square that circle. I really don't.
No. And I suppose part of it comes down to, and we always say, is business doesn't like uncertainty. And yet that's exactly what the business of government is facing. Yes, they have squirreled away billions in two long-term funds. Yes, they are running surpluses and have done for several years. But like we're heading into the unknown, and if it is the case that President Trump remains married to his tariffs, then everything's going to get a shake-up, which means the government is going to have to come back and make tougher decisions. And I think that letter from someone like the Enterprise Minister or Public Expenditure Minister is just a straw in the wind.
Yeah. Michael McGrath and Pascal Donoghue both saying at the moment, and there's still 2 weeks to go on those EU trade talks, they're kind of working on the basis of the 10% that the UK got. Everything is so uncertain, who can know? And there isn't a lot of clarity yet on pharma, which will also have a big impact on us.
Yeah, I mean, so what happened was that the European Commission sent out a list of possible reciprocal tariffs if things went wrong, and we saw things were on it, and the Irish government has come back to the Commission and said, well, don't hit us here, there or anywhere. So we have to wait to see what a 10% tariff would mean, what the reciprocal measures could mean, how Irish industry would be affected. But also that wider thing, what does it mean for the exchequer?
Hope you're not booking any holidays. It sounds like a busy enough summer coming up.
West Cork, so should be okay.
Juliet, you were talking about Jennifer Carroll McNeill this week.
That's right. She was answering questions on health this morning, and she gave that line on that COVID, long COVID payment ending. So Marie Sherlock from Labour, the health spokesperson there, asked her, is it ending? She had one figure of people from the HSE and Section 38 organisations who were on that. Effectively, Jennifer Carroll McNeill corrected her figure slightly, but she said there were 159 staff who were on this payment, which meant that they were receiving their full pay for the past 5 years. That's going to stop on Monday. A lot of these people will have said to Marie Sherlock and in public that this is a lifeline for them, that they cannot go back to work. Now, Jennifer Carroll McNeill maybe slightly laid the blame at DEEPER, Department of Public Expenditure and Reform. And she was saying that, we knew this scheme was ending and that they can still avail of the public sector sick pay scheme. However, that involves having your full pay for maybe 3 months and then it tapers down. These people have been off for 5 years on sick leave. So one would imagine that their entitlements under that scheme now are very small. It is with the Labour Court. The unions have referred it there, and Jennifer Carl McNeill said she referred it there. Now, I think both politicians praised the huge work that these people did, bearing in mind, and Jennifer Carl McNeill also did praise them for this. At the beginning of the pandemic, these were people who were on the front line when PPE wasn't really a thing and they didn't have all the protections that they came to have later. So it's very hard for these people who did contract this illness at work.
There was a big reaction too, wasn't there, Juliet, to that report from Women's Aid about the big increase in reports from women on gender-based violence.
Yeah, and it was cited as the tip of the iceberg as well. Sarah Benson, the CEO of Women's Aid, was saying that it is a good thing that more people report domestic violence, but it really is definitely the tip of the iceberg, as she said. There were some really impassioned contributions on it in the Dáil. I thought Gary Gannon was quite strong on it too. He was talking, as was the Minister for Justice, Jim O'Callaghan, about the role of men in domestic violence, because it is the majority are women who suffer disproportionately to men from domestic and gender-based violence. And then the men who suffer are also suffering at the hands of men for the most part, or for a significant part. And both Gary Gannon and Jim O'Callaghan were saying that it's up to men. It's up to men to call it out. It's up to men to end it. And it's up to, I suppose, adults to teach children that what they see online and what they see on pornography is not representative of reality, and to call out people.
It was interesting that it branched into a wider thing. Mm. It wasn't getting down to one area of policy. It was quite a wide thing. And there were interesting points being made. So, for example, the Justice Minister, Jim O'Callaghan, was talking about one of the things that he's tried to do in the few months that he's been in office was reducing the occurrence whereby counselling notes of a victim of abuse was given to a defence counsel. And he said this only had to happen in limited circumstances. He was moving on that. There was also something that was raised by the Sinn Féin leader, Mary Lou McDonald, where she was saying we often focus on the issue of refuges and places, but she said, why should it be that the perpetrator is the person who remains in the home? Why is it that usually the woman is the person to have to leave? And once again, Minister O'Callaghan came in and said that was something he agreed with and was looking at. So you could see that there was some progress being made. So I think you're right, that issue of hitting the tip of the iceberg, and that it was good that more reports would be made and we were getting a better understanding of it. But there was also, at the same time, it seemed to me, some cross-party agreement on how to proceed, which was encouraging.
And also that Jim O'Callaghan gave fair dues to Helen McEntee, his predecessor, who really kind of drove a lot of change in this area.
And got a lot of criticism
for it.
Yes, during her time, for focusing so much on the issue of gender violence. The issue of the Middle East, clearly, and Gaza, we won't go into Call Me Daddy, but I do want to talk about that EU report. Tony Connolly had a very good piece on it at the weekend. Mm-hmm. This report into the EU-Israel Trade Association Agreement and as to whether Israel was in breach of the human rights clauses. Now, the Taoiseach has been very clear this week, hasn't he, with his utter disappointment that despite that very clear report, the EU is still divided, still won't act.
Yeah, so this is the EU trade agreement which was struck between the European Union and Israel. And part of its provisions were that there were human rights that both sides had to live up to. Otherwise, then the trade agreement would be called into question. And what the Taoiseach Micheál Martin and indeed the Foreign Affairs Minister and Taoiseach Simon Harris were saying is that if you deem the agreement had been broken, in their words, there have to be consequences. Consequences have to flow from it. And as Tony told very articulately, how the assessment of human rights breaches, particularly focused in last March and the question of the blockade which was placed on the Gaza Strip, which meant that food wasn't getting in, water wasn't getting in, medical supplies weren't getting in, the absolute basic needs of any population, and how you could see the spectre of famine breaking out. So that was pretty clear. The Taoiseach was pretty clear. Legally, it would seem pretty clear, but this is politics. Mm. And there are certain countries within the European Union who will not go against Israel, sometimes for historical reasons like Germany or Austria. Mm. But others are just very much in step with them, which to a certain extent Irish people find difficult because there does seem to be such a uniformity of position on this particular issue. But the guts of it is that don't hold your breath. Doesn't look to me as if anything's going to happen on that front.
Where we have had some movement is on the Occupied Territories Bill. It's gone to the Foreign Affairs Committee. Its chair, John Lahart, is saying they'll do extra sittings if needs be to try and get this through. But there's certainly likely to be a lot of opposition amendments because the government's bill doesn't include services. And one of the key examples on services would be a settler with property in the occupied Palestinian territory that they're offering for rent on Airbnb based in Ireland.
Yeah, and Francis Black's initial bill from 2018 suggested and had in it, with the legal advice that she sought and received, that services could be included in this. And it was not until this term that the government party started to say that actually, no, their legal advice was different and it would show that it was very hard to regulate the services aspect. You can see that it is complicated. Obviously, Airbnb has a headquarter presence in Dublin and then will be, you know, trading in the occupied territories. But there are two very different schools of thought, as you say, and they will certainly be raised. I mean, the Taoiseach has said he will keep an open mind as to whether services can be included. He said that repeatedly. However, the bill, which has a new name and longer, more convoluted name, only focuses on goods at the moment. I mean,
it's a five-page document. One would imagine that they should be able to get through it reasonably quickly. According to the Department of Foreign Affairs, usually takes around 8 weeks to get through pre-legislative scrutiny. There's 4 weeks left in this Dáil term before they rise for the summer, so that puts some pressure on it. One thing to watch out for, and it's clear from the you know, people like Senator Francis Black, is they want to see it expedited, but they also want to see the Taoiseach, Minister for Foreign Affairs, Simon Harris, do what his spokespeople said he was going to do, which was go down during pre-leg hearings and be there to answer any questions which were being put to him.
Matt Carthy, and you got to ask him a question in relation to Bluey, Juliet. And this is all to do with the fact that Matt Carthy was not in the chamber when the vote was taken on the renewal of the Offences Against the State Act, a renewal that Sinn Féin normally opposes vehemently and would have been expected to do again had its justice spokesperson been in the Dáil chamber.
Indeed, this was all sort of unfolding on Wednesday evening, and the timing of things has been very unusual this Dáil term. And we were all sort of looking, going, wait, is this happening already? Are they already getting to a vote on it? And the chamber looked virtually empty. Now, my colleague Micheál Lehane checked in with Matt Carthy as to why he wasn't in the chamber. And he said, oh, he had to step out. Now, I asked him today about that and why he missed it. And he said, well, in all honesty, he said he had to answer nature's call. And I couldn't help but ask him. Didn't quite intend to, but asked him if this were a tactical wee, which is a reference to the Australian cartoon Bluey, where they suggest that even if you think you don't really need a wee, maybe you should have a tactical wee just to avoid any accidents. And Matt Carthy said that he believed that it was actually Minister of State Niall Collins who was being tactical about not calling a vote on the matter, and but he did concede that all is fair in love and politics. And I got to ask a TD about weeing. So,
yeah, did he get the reference to Bluey? Are his kids young enough?
I don't think his kids are quite young enough, but sadly, there weren't enough people on the plinth to explain it to him. But one of his colleagues, one of his Sinn Féin colleagues, did, because she burst out laughing. So, it was all done in good natured
fashion.
In the
best possible taste.
Indeed.
That's what we try to provide you with every week. All right. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you then next week.